Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. My co-host, Souther Teague, is at Tales on the Road in Edinburgh in Scotland. So it makes just perfect sense to have a couple of fellas in here to talk about Scotch whiskey. I want to welcome to the show Donal Brophy and Mike McKish.
Hi.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
First time here.
Thanks very much for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, let's just get right into it. We got a lot of whiskey to drink today.
Certainly do.
So why don't you tell us about what you do separately? Donal, you own a bar, Highlands.
Yes, I own Highlands NYC. It's been in operation now for pretty much 10 years.
Great.
Kind of rode the wave of the early renaissance and kind of, you know, like liquor and when people started to really start to take an interest in the liquids.
Yeah.
And myself and my business partner were bartenders for many years and obviously, you know, liquid geeks, like I'm sure a lot of people listening were, and went on a expedition to Scotland and basically like toured the whole Highlands, Bayside, the whole area. And we came back to New York and we were like, we saw a gap in the market for a low key, kind of down to earth whiskey bar, not just Scotch, but, you know, mostly Scotch. And we decided to kind of cultivate that, and thankfully it's been, you know, it's become quite an institution in the West Village.
Yeah, I love the place. I was there, I was just telling you before the show, I was there a couple nights ago.
Yeah, it's funny, everybody know, every you're like, you know, I have a bar, and like, what bar? And Highlands, oh my god, I met my wife there or something. They have like four kids running around. I'm like, I'm responsible for that.
Must have a lot of whiskey.
Yeah,
she'd leave married.
Is it? Yeah, it's like that open bar thing we're talking about before.
Right.
It's like, challenge accepted.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now I have four kids. Cool, man. Yeah, it's a great bar.
Thank you.
I've been there a lot. But yeah, cool, man. And Michael?
So I have the beautiful job of doing media relations for Visit Scotland, which involves drinking, thankfully, a lot of whiskey, getting to travel around Scotland and getting to know all the different areas and different regions, and then coming over and just making sure that U.S. consumers and people around the world know about the Scottish product, so know about the craft and what's actually happening in the country and all the exciting things.
Cool, man.
He also carries a bag of top shelf Scotch with him wherever he goes. Right.
And we,
and we don't have any in front of us right
wherever I go.
Have any front. We do not have a beautiful Highland Park 12 year right now.
It's almost it's a legal requirement for me. They won't let me into anywhere without at least three whiskeys.
Well, I'm very envious of your job right now. So was this something that you kind of grew up into? I always feel like everyone from like Scotland or Ireland, they grew up in like whiskey families. Like if you're from Kentucky here, it's like you're like in a bourbon family, you know?
Yeah. I'm actually going to say no. I mean, you know, I mean, I grew up in Ireland and, you know, this kind of, you know, speaks to, you know, the general renaissance we're starting to see in small batch, you know, like distilleries that we've kind of started to see, you know, 10 years ago pop up around Scotland. And now you're starting to see a lot of them in Ireland as well. But, you know, growing up in the, you know, the 90s in Ireland, there were, you know, a lot of the whiskey distilleries were owned by the bigger conglomerates. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't really a lot of variation. There certainly wasn't a lot of people having fun with, you know, crossing woods and malts and all the rest of it. So we, you know, like the gantry in your Irish bar was pretty basic. You had Jemison, Bushmill, Powers, you know, Johnny Walker, Glenfiddich, whatever. Great whiskies, but there just wasn't a huge selection. It wasn't really until I moved to New York and, you know, kind of started to get involved in the downtown kind of bar scene that I had kind of an intellectual awakening, so to speak, with sure. With liquor, which, you know, led me to, you know, be inspired to open up my own whiskey bar.
Yeah,
it's interesting to say that, because I couldn't agree more. It's the same in Scotland as well. If you spoke to my father and my grandfather actually worked in a whiskey distillery for about 20 years, and he would never drink the single malt whiskey that was to be exported. And they drank the likes of Teachers or Famous Grouse, the rough sure, stuff, which right. is still wonderful, but in its own way, but doesn't quite have the same craft behind it. Uh-huh. And over the last 10-15 years, there's been this beautiful renaissance, this distillation or excitement about the culture that comes around whiskey. Like, people are really getting into it. And it's lovely to hear my friends and my peers go to bars and start talking about Scottish whiskey, because that's what it is. It's not just a drink, it's a talking point, it's a narrative. Mm-hmm. There's a culture and a craft behind it. Mm. So it gives you something to talk about at a bar and something to be really proud of as a Scottish person. So that's why I travel with whiskey wherever I go, because it's just a primary example of Scottish craft and love that gets poured into
I'm sure you make
drink.
A lot of friends.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's something interesting about Scotch whiskey. To me, it's like in the same way that rum, they're the two categories of spirits that I feel like vary the most. Mm-hmm. And one of them has a lot of rules, and the other one is just straight up outlaw. You know, like rum, there are like basically no rules.
I actually love rum cask whiskey, by the way. The hybrid of them, of both of them, it's spectacular.
We were talking about that earlier. That Balvenie Caribbean,
cask. The Caribbean cask,
just dude, all day,
so. So effing good.
Yeah.
I can curse, right? You tell me I could curse earlier on.
You can say
I think it's like my mom.
Effing's allowed.
It's so effing good.
Especially when we're drinking whiskey, I think is expected. Right. We get passionate.
Yeah,
so
hopefully
okay.
we don't, you know, break into a bar fight. getting back to what you were saying, I think the interesting thing about, you know, and the unique thing about Scotch whiskey, and one of the things that kind of like drew me down the rabbit hole with it, was the international flair that's involved. You know, like you have all this wood, you know, I always had these like visions of like these, you know, mast sail ships pulling up into like Glasgow and unloading all this like bourbon cask and port cask and sherry cask and rum cask. But there is something so romantic about that, you know, that the Scots, who are a tiny bunch at the best of times, or, you know, bringing in all of this like wood from all over the world, and then that wood being distributed and sent to all these distilleries, and then when it gets to the distilleries, the master distiller gets to decide what liquid goes into the wood and how old that liquid is going to be. I mean, it's so intricate and it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the age of kind of like mass production and all the rest of it, it's just an incredible talent to be able to know what goes with what.
It's really cool that you have that that perception of it, because as a local Scottish person, I see it very localized.
Right.
So I'll go and I'll walk down to this distillery, which was 10 minutes from my house, down a nice little cobbled path. It's picturesque, but, you know, it is what it is. And
not
you get
the pouring rain on your way to school.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that helped me through school. And you get there, and it's like, it's Stevie from down the road. And Stevie from down the road has been making this whiskey for 20 years. And for 150 years, this distillery has run the same way. But this whiskey, I mean, we would never know it at the time, but this whiskey is going around the world. I could go to Taipei, I could go to Japan, and I could look at a shelf of spirits at a bar, and I could say, I'll take an Oban. And that's like, that's a beautiful thing for me, that just instills this lovely pride.
You are from Oban?
Yeah. That's my hometown. God, so, yeah.
You know what's cool about this conversation? Is like, neither of you are tied to any brands. No, it's so cool. Yeah. It's just like for the love.
I never thought
of,
about that actually. Yeah.
It's not about like, it's so cool, man.
Yeah. So, we just like to drink whiskey. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not fussy.
Well, no, it's funny. We were talking
the right radio show.
We were talking earlier on about, you know, Michael noticed there was a certain amount of whiskey behind it, one brand, different variations of one brand. And he asked if there was some sort of connection, and I was like, no, it's like, you know, the bartenders themselves really, you know, as I said, they're such nerds that they don't necessarily, they can't be bought. They, like, you know, if they like a liquid, or if they feel like it's if it's on brand for them, for the establishment, pretty sometimes even for their own personal brand. I mean, some of these guys are like up to all sorts. You know, they will, you know, promote the shit out of it, and they'll, you know, with the passion, and they'll convert people.
Bartenders are the number one salesperson.
Seriously, and it's it's great when you see people coming into Highlands, and like, you know, like you see it with a lot of women coming in, and you know, I've seen more and more, you know, like female, like Scotch drinkers in Highlands. It wouldn't be unusual for a bunch of three girls to come in and order, like, you know, a Brookladdock or a Glenfiddich or like
some sort of some crazy box. Like Islay Scotch.
You know? Absolutely, and like on the, with rocks on the side and a tiny little flask of like soda water on the side. I mean, full on. You know, like really no shit kind of stuff. Yeah. Like really chic as well, because it's just like, wow, you know, like, and I, that as well as all the engagements and the children, that I get, you know, I feel very proud of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a way of becoming instantly cool. Like,
it is.
You lean on the bar and you go, I'll have the
Ardbeg
14. And like, totally. You know, you instantly, people think this guy knows what he's talking about.
Just yeah. Like a gorgeous woman, on. Like ordering like, you know, whatever, like a Glenfiddich or whatever.
It happened to me.
Glenrothes or whatever.
Can't get much more beautiful than that.
It happened to me 10 years ago. I was working in this little bar in kind of a now burgeoning neighborhood in Brooklyn. It was like Prospect Heights.
Right.
And one day, two ladies came in, kind of like younger, like probably mid-20s. They came in and they sat at the bar, and one of them ordered like a Rittenhouse neat.
Yeah.
And the other one ordered a Lafroy neat. Mm. And I think those were the two whiskeys. And I was just like, dude, this is badass. Like,
yeah.
and it was like, that was the first moment that I started noticing females ordering.
Yeah, it really is something that's, it's like a seismic shift over the last, you know, mm-hmm. 8 years.
But if you think about it, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but like on most distilleries' tasting panels, they're predominantly female.
Really?
Like, especially, well, in Kentucky, a lot of them are like.
Are you from Kentucky?
I'm from Oklahoma.
You're from Oklahoma.
So I just drink Lone Star.
not today.
Yeah, not today.
But you've spent time there.
I'm splitting my time between the Chenin Blanc and an Aberfeldy 12.
Dude, you're going to be so hungover.
Yeah. I don't know how much I ate before this.
It's going to be worth it. Yeah. It's interesting, though, like we're talking about females there. It's because a lot of them, they're the tastemakers. Honestly, that's why it's so exciting that you're getting so many females drinking whiskey.
So what do you guys think about, like, we're talking about Scotch whiskey today. What do you think about, like, American single malts and, like, Japanese single malts coming into the market? Is there, like, a pushback from, like, Scotland? Or is it, like, kind of like a rising tide?
I love it. I think it's wonderful. I think competition like that, one, if it's craft and done properly, and within Japanese culture, of course, you have that. You take your time and you do it right. Yeah. Everyone raises their game.
So. Well, they've been winning all the prizes.
Yeah, that Hibiki is something else.
Yeah.
You know, good for them. You know, I can also see, you know, as the, you know, as the Irishman on the panel here, so, I can also see it, you know, really starting to, you know, take a hold in Ireland too. There's all these great little micro distilleries popping up all over the place, and they're having a great time, like peating whiskies and crossing with all different types of. It's so cool. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, the infrastructure and you know, the water, you know, I mean, in Scotland is very special, and you in Ireland too. But if there's, you know, like, it's nothing like the real thing. I mean, especially with the hundreds of years of practice and, you know, distilling that down, it's like, it's pretty special.
Was there any kind of like attempted extinguishing of the small brands, like,
oh happening. God, yeah. Because, well, I mean, in Ireland, that's what happened. You know, like 150 years ago, there was all these small whiskey, you know, like some of them bootleg, you know, distilleries all over, and then they were all closed by the bigger corporations. Yeah. And it's really only in the last 10 years that you know, it's probably worth the Diageos of the world and whatever investing in smaller distilleries, because I think that's what people are drawn to more these days.
Yeah. I think it's so cool that a lot of these big brands are buying them and they're terrified to change them because they realize they bought them for a reason. They know that these people are doing amazing work, so they have to leave it. They have to leave them how they are, and these people are still operating the same way they did for 150 years, but they just have this behemoth marketing brand behind them. So it's
weird. It's like one of the up upshots of this kind of strange return to analog that the zeitgeist seems to be going through at the moment, politically, socially, all, you know, everything. It's one of the good sides of that, that people are starting to really kind of like look around them and take notice of what their indigenous kind of, you know, liquid is, craftsmanship, all that kind of stuff. And, you know,
people want real shit, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's
great.
We've had bullshit for so long, and just like the run of the mill everything.
Oh my god! When I started bartending in New York, you would get, you know, obviously a Cosmopolitan, because Sex in the City was fucking
sure. Right.
And then it was just vodka tonics and beers and shots of Jack. You know, now I was working in, you know, the dens of iniquity in the Lower East Side, so that might have had something to do with it. But even uptown, you would be, you know, like, you know, you'd have some like 70-year-old dude looking for like a Sazerac or something like that. But it was as interesting as
and you were you freaked out. You were like,
to make you
if only we had
hold on. And then you get nervous and you have to do it like five times because you're just so excited to make a sauce.
If only I had any of the ingredients for that.
Whereas then by the time, you know, like I'm not really behind the bar so much anymore, but by the time I was, you know, like stopped bartending, Jesus, like you would have to have an extra guy there because you were just muddling, you were shaking, you were stirring, you were like pulling stuff off the gantry. It was like the works.
It's really interesting as well. Like, it's a good topic of conversation. Cocktails. For me, like, this is completely changed. I mean, it's 10, 20 years ago, if you suggested I'm going to put single malt whiskey in cocktails, the horror that would be met with.
It's the same way that Italians feel about their Amari. You know, it's like, this is like this was specifically thought out to be this flavor profile, and now you're doing what with it?
Yeah. In fairness, we actually use a lot of blended whiskeys in our Scotch tales in New York. Excuse me, in Highlands. But like, I mean, Grouse is a great mixing whiskey. Great mixing whiskey.
And like, there's some gentler whiskeys, I suppose, like with tasting. Glenmorangie, for example. Glenmorangie tastes wonderful in a cocktail if you balance out the flavors well.
Yeah.
I use it all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I had two different back-to-back episodes a few years back before my co-host Souther came on. And I usually sit over there where you're sitting, Michael.
Okay.
So in this seat, one week I had Richard Patterson from Bowmore. He was... Dalmore. He was sitting here and... He was like, yeah, so when people talk about, you know, putting water in whiskey or ice, you know, here's how you do that. You put it in there, you swish it around, you smell it, and you look at it, and then you throw it out. And I think that those sticky marks on the window, I think that's his whiskey. All over the mics, all over the boards, everything was shorting out.
That was like, you weren't the only person doing back-to-back that day, I'm sure. It's good about,
Got a little unhinged.
The next week, I had the people from Highland Park on, which we have right in front of us. I'm actually having some right now. On, and they were slunch.
Yeah, slunch.
And they were just like, man, you know what? Do what you want with it. It's like, as long as you're enjoying
it.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, the pretense has kind of come out of it a lot, you know?
I think with any cocktail, you have to be responsible of the flavors that go into it, of course. You know, and there's a lot of stuff that gets muddied up and kind of just like overcomplicated, but you know, classics are classic for a reason. And there's nothing more classic than Scotch whiskey.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing more classic than a Blood and Sand or a Scotch Old Fashioned. You know, like, really, you know.
I think when something is very well made as well, there should be no limitations attached to it. Not why Scotch whiskey's made to be put in a box or to be snobbish, or you have to drink it this way. That goes completely against the ideology behind it. That's not what we want whatsoever.
Cool, man. Well, let's take one quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking whiskey and drinking whiskey. Back in a moment.
Cheers.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh cheese curds or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company, the operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com. And as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And today we're talking scotch whiskey. We're talking whiskey. We're just talking whiskey in general.
Okay. Yeah.
We happen to be drinking a bunch of scotch, though. We've got Donald and Michael. We've been talking about some of these different scotch whiskey. You know, we were talking about the back bar earlier on the first half of the show and about how it was kind of like the same stuff that you would find everywhere. I was kind of liking it to like an airport bar.
Yeah.
And I always say, like, at my bar, like, when people ask me why I don't have certain things, I'm like, well, I don't stock anything that you can get on an airplane. But that's changed, you know?
Yeah.
It's changed quite a bit over the last, you know, 5-7 years. You're starting to see more like craft brands on airplanes and
yeah.
at like arena, like sporting arenas, stuff like that. But I was wondering, because like I know that back in the day, and still to this day, actually, there are a lot of like pubs that are like owned by like, say, like Polliner or, you know, Pilsner Urquell or whatever. You know, like it's typically like a German, Czech kind of vibe. But I know that there are a few in New York City that are like old school breweries that own like.
Right.
These bars.
Yeah.
So do you think that might have been part of the case with some of these bigger brands?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it can speak to, you know, growing up in Ireland, you know, Guinness was like obviously mm-hmm. the biggest employer in the, you know, in Dublin, and also everyone drank it. So, you know, Guinness had ties with certain whiskey brands, and you know, it was all, you know, kind of agreed upon what whiskeys
right,
you would
right.
be pouring, and you wouldn't really see a lot of Scotch whiskey behind the thing. And it also had a lot to do, frankly, with, you know, whether or not what class you were, what religion you were. If you were Catholic, you drank Jameson. If you were Protestant, you drink Bushmills. It's crazy and
that's
ridiculous.
As that so amazing
sound.
To me.
Yeah, I mean, now it's a joke. It's like, you know, I grew up Catholic, but I actually prefer Bushmills, so I don't drink Jameson. All my friends always kind of give me the stink eye whenever I like order like a Bushmills, and I proddy, you know, joking. but yeah, I mean, we laugh about it now, but you know, back in those days, I guess it was a real form of cultural identity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what would be a similar, you know, in the States.
Well, I suppose you think about your drink as a big part of your identity still. Like people yeah, will, you know, still see
it's Ford versus Chevy here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would also, you know, like the likes of between Jack and say Knob Creek or so, or you know, like Knob Creek would be considered, you know, like more of an urbanite kind of hipstery kind of, like, you know, or then Jack would be a little bit more rock and roll or something. I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to.
I think it's funny that like the number one selling whiskey in Texas is Crown Royal.
Really?
Not a lot of people know that.
Interesting.
But
Canadian.
You would
right.
think, yeah, you would think like it'd be like straight up. But you know what?
America.
It's Crown of Coke, dude.
Yeah,
I drink the shit out of Crown of Coke.
Crown and Ginger used to, was my crazy Uncle Harry who had a bar in
crazy
Canada.
Uncle Harry's drink.
Crazy Uncle Harry. He had a bar in Canada, a small little town called Grand Bend on Lake Huron, and he fucking drank Crown and Ginger until the fucking cows came home. Like he was mad for it.
Happy man.
I always remember that silk purple satchel that it came in.
Oh,
he's gives me
fear to this day.
So, yeah, dude. I mean, that, you know,
how did we segue into my crazy?
Yeah, I'm terrified of him already.
Everything comes back to Uncle Harry.
This could turn into a therapy session for you. Enough whiskey, so you could be lying back, and we could be going, "Tell us about your childhood."
Too much whiskey. So, speaking of right now we're drinking the Highland Park 12-year. This is one of my favorite fucking whiskeys of all time. And it's pretty cool, man. Like, the this is the American Oak finished one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So right? You can be honest, Michael?
No, yeah. Sorry. That's the 15 is the American Oak. This is...
We've got the 12.
We've got the 12. Great. Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Orkney for a little bit. It's kind of like wild, right? It's like a fucking Viking island, like north. It's the northernmost part of Scotland.
Well, no, we got one more further north. You got Shetland, which is way up there. But it's interesting because it is Viking country. So,
one of the earliest civilizations that, like, in Europe, the Pict civilization that originated in Orkney, right? Mm. They were brewing liquid, still in liquid. Thousands of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, whiskey as we know it, 15th century. Yeah. Like, that's when it really kind of kicked off. I mean, that's crazy when you think about how young the US of A is making whiskey since the 15th century. So we should be good at it by now.
Yeah, and it's funny, the Irish were very known for their whiskey back in the Elizabethan times. Mm-hmm. But as you said, there was definitely like a corporate kind of movement, like, you know, a couple of hundred years ago on that. The bigger distilleries kind of took over the smaller ones. What didn't really happen in Scotland, though, right?
No, not necessarily. And what I love about Highland Park, though, is that you can taste a little bit of that seaside.
Mm-hmm. Like,
you get the flavor of it there. Yeah. And it gives you that sense of place, which I love.
Yeah.
And plus, it's a single malt Scotch whiskey that's made by Vikings. You don't get much cooler than that.
Is there any whiskey that comes out of, like, you know, Norway and Sweden and stuff?
The Swedes do some really good whiskey.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They've been working on it for quite a while as well, so...
They got all that barrel-aged aquavit. That's what they're dealing with, man. That's where all the barrels go.
The aquavit is dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, especially the way it's meant to be drunk, you know? It's like, going to it. Like, if you go down to, like, Brighton Beach, go to one of those Russian places, man, you are going to have a whole bottle of vodka to yourself.
It's funny, even, you know, I can see with vodka, like, all these, like, craft vodkas that come out as well. It's like bonkers how much, you know.
Can you differentiate between the flavors of a vodka? Because, I mean, obviously I've worked at it for whiskey and I know a bit about gin, but I can't with vodka.
You know, it's really exhausting, like, I'm part of tasting panels for, like, the New York Spirits Competition. I've done the Las Vegas one. I think I'm doing the San Francisco one next year. But you start your day when you're judging spirits, you start your day with vodkas because it makes sense because your palate's fresh and it's like limber, you know, and you work up and then you end with like the craziest shit, like ready to drink cocktails and like cream liqueurs and shit like that.
Oh, yeah. But you start the day. Airplane.
Yeah, exactly. But you start your day with vodkas and it's like, I can tell you from experience, man, it's like, there is, and I'm not saying, I don't have the greatest palate of all time, but for some reason they keep hiring me to do these things. but it is really interesting when you wake up and start drinking vodka.
Jesus.
It's crazy Uncle Harry's.
Crazy Uncle Harry's territory. You got into Harry territory there.
So it became crazy.
But just by virtue of like what this is, what the liquid is in the glass and the bottle, it's like you want congeners. You want that's what brings the flavor to the spirit, you
absolutely.
Know? Mm-hmm. So when you're distilling a vodka 40 times, it's like...
Right.
Man. Yeah.
I guess the biggest difference would be between, like, is it rye vodka or potato vodka.
Rye, wheat,
all that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. But you know, like, what I have to say I do like? And it's so weird, but I really like wet martinis, you know, equal parts.
Oh, man, me too.
Love that. Like, with an orange twist or whatever like that.
I like grapefruit.
To me, you know, because it's like, sometimes you just want something just really clean and fresh. Mm-hmm. And like,
yeah,
you know, like,
totally. And I think that's coming back, though. I think people are starting... People, too... Two things. First of all, people have been starting to get more into vermouths, and like there's a market for vermouth now.
Yeah.
So to make a 50-50 or like an Astoria cocktail, you're going to let that shine for sure. But then people are also starting to get it, like the consumer market is starting to get more into all types of aperitifs and fortified wines.
Still, you can see all these like crazy bitters.
Sherry. Like, it's crazy, you know. It was great.
Can we mention gin for a moment as well? Gin seems
Scotland has taken a huge... gin has taken a huge hold of Scotland. It's like gin crazy right now.
I love telling the story of there was a gin craze in the whole of the UK at one point, that they had to ban gin because there was so much gin drinking
in modern times, or like in... James the First, isn't that famous?
Not like last year. And it was pretty far back. But because it was called Mother's Ruin, because the women were just drinking gin and then they were breastfeeding, going straight into the kids.
Yeah. Well, there's a crazy story when William of Orange, took over the throne in England after James the First, like the Protestant king, took over from getting back to religion and spirits. He basically banned all imports from Catholic countries. So there was no, you know, cognac coming in from France. A lot of whiskey distilleries were in trouble in Scotland. So all anybody could drink was gin. That's where Old Tom style gin comes from, because they used to have a little cat on the wall. That's where you go and you get your bootleg gin. But it took such a hold. That's where carving. Gin Alley, all that depravity, because everyone was like on this crate, wired on this like bathtub gin for like 2 years.
That's where Dutch courage came from as well. Because the Dutch army, everyone noticed the Dutch army were just powering into battle all the time, and they wondered why.
Guinevere gin does has it like whiskey has an interesting such an interesting element to it, because of the amount of fun you can have with the botanicals, like how you can have the spectrum of the flavor profiles. Holding on to that kind of like junipery flavor. Sorry,
have you seen the bottle of the Botanist? They have all the
lists, all the botanicals.
All the botanicals, and it's all within
indigenous.
Most of it's 6 miles within a distillery. It's so cool, crazy. It's so cool. But it's huge in Scotland at the moment.
Yeah, the Botanist is a great product, actually. Oh, I love the Botanist. Yeah.
Do you know, I have problems deciding between that and the Harris distillery. So Harris, Outer Hebrides, just opened a new distillery.
Yeah. Well, we had a bar at Whitehall, which we closed like last year, but we had it for 6 years, and that was a gin bar. We tend to like get super like into a spirit and then decide to open up a bar around that spirit. We had a lot of adventures in gin through those like 6 years, where we had like a massive a whole gin list.
Yeah,
it's a playful spirit. You can do a lot with it.
It is. Got to know a lot about it. Yeah, got to know a lot about it. It has a really interesting history too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
do a lot of research, a lot of gin drinking.
Yeah.
Done a lot of work with gin. I actually work with Brooklyn Gin.
And you do? Oh, that's cool. Nice.
Then the Avril Damson Gin. I was the one who gave Scott Cron that idea, because he was like, wonder what to do with the gin market, and so. He'd never had Damson.
Aren't they
gin
in Williamsburg, Brooklyn Gin, right there? Don't they have distillery in Williamsburg?
The distillery, they're moving. The distillery is going to be like in the Carroll Gardens, Gowanus area.
Okay, yeah.
Right now they're doing everything upstate in Warwick.
I went to a wedding in Britain.
Yeah, and then I actually did an Old Tom Gin with Green Hook Ginsmiths, the barrel aged Old Tom Gin.
Oh, yeah.
That's me and my buddy Maxwell Britton.
I love that. And the Geneva as well. That's two really, strangely, probably in the next couple of years, we'll see a lot more of that. I mean, Geneva is kind of not for everyone, because it has a very musty, almost kind of peaty element to it. But Uncle Tom's great.
Yeah. And you can get really weird with it.
Totally. And like the Indian gins, the Raj gins and all that.
Yeah, totally.
The spice gins.
The Cadenheads.
So good.
Yeah. So when you guys are, this is great. I mean, like, I wish that the show was longer, but, when you guys are promoting whiskey, like what are some of the things that you do to promote? Like, do you have like different tasting nights at the bar? Like when you're giving tours in Scotland, like, are there certain like events that you hold, like dinners and things like that? Or
we do a lot of whiskey tastings and paired with, but for me, the quintessential way to get to know a whiskey is actually to go and to see the people that make it and see the history and the culture behind it. Because it's a culture. It's not just a history. It's a way of life. It's people live, breathe, and love it.
Yeah.
And that's ingrained in not just the people and the place. So each whiskey has a narrative of that place. And you get a sense of pride. So say you're drinking, say we're drinking Highland Park. We're not just drinking.
Let's say that we're drinking this PC.
Yeah, let's say.
What are we drinking now, though? Aren't we drinking the
Port Charlotte?
Port Charlotte, okay, so we're drinking this beautiful Islay whiskey. And you can taste Islay in it. You taste a bit of the culture and a bit of the love that went into it over the years. And that's the best way to get to know the whiskey by far.
I agree. I think, you know, I always tell... I've always told every chef that I've worked with, it's like, if you're running a special for the night, like a dish, it's like, or you're like changing something on the menu, it's like, you can't just run, you can't just like rattle off, you can't give the servers and the bartenders like the special of the day, just like the words. It's like, put that plate up so we can taste it and experience, because we, you know, like from the bar and also from your job, Mike. Mm. Sorry, Michael.
We'll go with Mike. We've had three whiskeys. Cool.
All right, fine. We're in America, man. Yeah. Your name's Mike, man.
I dig it. I'm with it.
But, you know, we're sharing experiences. So, like, you actually have to experience that dish, that whiskey, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of interest at Highlands because we have a restaurant attached to the Highlands, and we do basically modern Scottish fare.
Do Scotch eggs?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. We do. At langoustine and haggis and all the rest of it. But we get a lot of, you know, interest in our, we have a whole pairing menu where we pair. We do three course dinners, and we pair each course with a whiskey. You know, like, and food and whiskey happen to go extraordinarily well together. You know, you take the slight burn out of it, just add like a little water, and you know, we usually start off with like a, you know, like a good like Scottish chowder, langoustine soup kind of a thing, and you'll have like a pita.
Oysters.
Yeah, or oysters.
Dude, I was at
good.
Actually, great with whiskey.
Speaking of,
you know what's great with whiskey as well? Everyone in Brazil is drinking it. Coconut water.
What?
Yeah, in Rio, everybody loves coconut water and scotch.
Dude, it's so good, man. Brian Miller, back when he was at Death & Company, he had a cocktail called the Grass Kilt. And it was like a tiki scotch drink.
Totally.
And it had like, I think it was like coconut tea infused. Famous Grouse, I think. I want to say it was Famous Grouse.
Yeah.
And it was like just this kind of like daiquiri coconut thing with scotch.
Yeah.
It was so fucking good. Yeah.
This is like no limitations.
It's like putting a little bit of water in it, but it has a little kind of creamy texture to it. And then putting it with something that has the Port Charlotte, perfect. And it kind of opens it up. It gives it a tiny little bit of a sweetness.
Chocolate. Yeah. Honestly, for me, chocolate and whiskey, I'm home.
Absolutely.
It's
something
dark special.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
Seriously.
God, now I'm hungry.
Hungry and thirsty.
Hungry and thirsty, yeah. So we've had the Aberfeldy 12 today. Mm-hmm. We've had the Highland Park 12. Now we're drinking the Port Charlotte. This is the Scottish Barley, correct?
Yep.
If I can see anything.
Yeah. Heavily peated, but it doesn't feel that heavily peated.
No, I mean, like a heavily peated one, you call a meal. You can stand up, we would say in Scotland. Whereas this is gentle. This is playful.
I think it's quite,
you know what? I think what it is, it's like it's so malty, you know, like on the nose. It's like, I think it just kind of like balances that out.
What I love as well, this smells like Isla. Like if you go to Isla, the place smells like whiskey.
Yeah.
Good luck. I mean, it's one tiny little island with eight distilleries on it. So good luck going there and not being just drawn straight into the distilleries. Yeah.
Okay. It kind of blows my mind when you think about like the size of Scotland and the size of like, you know, all these little distilleries and the impact that it's had around the world. I mean, I spent time in India and, you know, they love scotch because it's kind of like, you know, the middle class is growing and then like people are getting rich.
It's a mark of distinction.
Yeah, and they want whiskey, they want scotch whiskey. So much so that actually it's a problem because they're counterfeiting it, right?
Yeah.
Big style. But you go to any of the kind of, you know, the reputable establishments in Bombay, and they have like they have major whiskey selections, and the guys are like
just
paying through the nose for like all this liquid, whatever. But it's just like, it's crazy, like the world over, out of this like small.
What's hilarious as well, or even more renowned, is you go to these distilleries and they look ancient, like they're wood, a lot of them. Like these places do not look like cutting edge. They look like they've been doing this as a craft and a passion for hundreds of years, and a lot of the places they have. So the fact that they are selling things that then go internationally just shows you the depth of the talent.
I hope everyone who's listening to the show has a scotch in front of them. Or at least
no, they will soon, hopefully.
Yeah, they will. I'm sure we're making their mouths water.
Yeah.
One of my favorite drinks of all time. I love whiskey sodas, man. I love a whiskey highball.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And it was like it was actually the first drink I ever had behind the bar because I made it for a customer who always drank Chivas and soda.
Hmm.
And he, all of a sudden, he always came out on Monday nights at 7 o'clock. I always had his Chivas and soda ready for him. And one day his... comes at it Monday, 7 o'clock. His wife told him he can't drink whiskey anymore. So I had this Chivas and soda, and I didn't know what to do with it. And it was like, I had just started bartending. I was like, I'm not I'm at work. I'm not supposed to drink behind the bar. Found out that that was the dumbest thing ever. and that rule has always been broken since then. But yeah. That's what got me into drinking scotch was scotch soda. And then it was like, just scotch on the rocks. And then just
splash
scotch.
Of soda. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like a little splash of soda.
I think the highball is really coming back right now.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
Yeah. People are kind of, you know, like, it's interesting, you know, the path to enlightenment is paved with excess, as the Buddhists say. We've had, like, this kind of crazy, you know, like, period of, you know, extravagant cocktails, people mixing liquids from all over the world, and that's been amazing. But I do think there's a return to kind of just, you know, more simplified.
It's sessionable. It's just like session beers, like, you know, lower ABV cocktails. Sessionable. It's refreshing. Yeah. But at the same time, you're not adulterating so much the flavor of that whiskey. Mm. And, you know, I think that's the coolest thing about
it. When the ingredients are good, you don't need to.
Exactly.
Like, absolutely.
We have to realize that, like, a lot of cocktails were actually mixed up to make bad booze taste better.
Yeah, especially during what, Prohibition time, when they didn't have access to good alcohol. What they did was they mixed it with lots of other things to make it palatable.
Absolutely.
We don't really need to do that anymore.
Well, guys, I'd love to have you guys back sometime.
No.
I know we're just getting into it.
We're going to have to do a sequel.
Yeah, I had another three whiskeys hidden away as well. I was just getting started.
Well, okay.
Bye, everybody.
Yeah. We'll continue off air.
Okay, I have a question, though. So, as a tall, lanky, hippie kid from small town in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, right.
What are the rules for me? Like, how can I wear a kilt? I mean, is that, like, acceptable?
I'll have to defer to you, Michael. I'm an Irishman and I've worn many a kilt. So
you need to wear a kilt, would be my response. You will never have the swagger, the swish that you do in a kilt.
And by the way, if you're getting your kilt, make sure to contact Howie Nichols via Twitter.
Howie's going to love you for that. No, I'm telling you, like, just put a kilt on and just see how it feels, because it is a wonderful experience. You get a swagger like
feel
you
like
can
a
never
woman.
Manage. Yeah. Yeah, which can only be a good thing. And not just that, the amount of people that will buy you drinks in New York just from wearing a kilt.
Oh, yeah. No, forget about it. New York, you're definitely going to get it.
You'll be like, drinking whiskeys all night. Cool, so,
you got a few hands. Right, you got a few hands up there. The question of you're wearing underwear with the bloody thing, obviously, which everyone's like, hey, you're wearing underwear with that? Because you're supposed to not wear underwear.
I'm
Are you wearing underwear with your kilt?
We'll leave that for next time.
You didn't want to sit facing the window like I am.
I'm like sitting right across from Michael. I'm just kind of like, my eyes are up here.
All right, cool.
Good to know.
All right.
Next time you see me, I'll be wearing a kilt.
Yes. All kilt.
I think you'd rock one very well.
All three of us kilted.
It's going to be pretty gnarly because I'm really tall, so it's going to be like a short skirt.
Make sure that your socks are pulled up to your knees.
Yeah.
Can I wear cowboy boots with a kilt?
Yes, you should wear cowboy boots with a kilt. Definitely.
This is so much positive reinforcement.
Cross-pollination, like the whiskey.
I feel so much better about myself after hanging out with you guys. I don't know if it's the whiskey or the
positive. Nothing to do with the poor Charlotte whatsoever.
Guys, slange of us. Beautiful. Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah. Cheers, guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's been a real pleasure. I would encourage everyone to visit Scotland.
Absolutely.
And also the Highlands Bar,
Highlands in, NYC.
NYC, yep. Man. Well, shit, man, that's it for the show this week. Souther, I hope you're having fun in Scotland, especially after hearing the show. And
was he listening? Oh, shout out to everyone in Oslo.
Yeah,
Our favorite
bar friends.
Bar friends in Oslo.
Cool, man. Yeah, man, that's it for the day. Please come back. Love to have you on anytime.
And love it.
Thanks, man.
Not just for the whiskey.
It was a pleasure.
Kill some whiskey next time.
That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out heritageradionetwork.org for many other programs like this one. Probably not as fun as this one, but no, they're all great. they're real cool.
Yeah, especially the school food one. That's
going to be the best one.
Not depressing at all.
That's depressing.
It's been a real fun one today. Check out the Speakeasy and HeritageRadioNetwork.org for any other programs like this one. Souther should be back next week, so we'll rally up again. But until then, cheers, guys. Sláinte.
Sláinte.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.